Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Hello, I'm Matt Hansen.
And I'm Tristan Riddell.
And now we take you live to the Senate floor.
Talk nerdy to me.
Welcome to Nerd Party.
That's right. Thank you for listening. Thank you for subscribing and downloading. We are the Senate floor. Now, some of you might be a little confused by that, and that's okay, because we made an announcement just the other day on Twitter, on Facebook, and on our website that the Nerd Party is no longer just a singular show. It is now a network. That's right. We are expanding. And so we thought, since the Nerd Party is a network, we kind of need to change the name of our show. So we changed it to The Senate Floor, because we have three shows on our network now at thenerdparty.com and hosted by The Nerd Party. We have our show, The Senate Floor, formerly known as The Nerd Party. We have my new show with my wife, aka The Girl, called Nerd Nuptial. If you have not heard that yet, I definitely recommend it, because I know I'm biased, but it's me and my wife. Just slightly, yeah. It's me and my wife. We're both nerds. We're both geeks. And so it's kind of a view on nerd life and pop culture as a married couple. And we had a lot of fun. We released our first episode last week, so please go to the website and find that out. And our third show is a show you might have already heard of, because they've had about four episodes so far. And that is Aggressive Negotiations, a Star Wars podcast. That's hosted by our good friends, John Mills and Matt Rushing. They have joined the Nerd Party, and we are, the four of us, are hosts of this new network, and I'm super excited about it.
Yeah, I am too. I never thought that when we started this little passion project that it would expand into a network, but here we are almost 2 years later.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing, and you guys definitely need to check out Aggressive Negotiations, because I think Matt Rushing and John Mills are some of the best podcasters out there, and they just have a great dynamic, and they're only getting better. And the thing about their podcast is, they kind of, it's not just like a review podcast where they talk about the episodes of Clone Wars or talk about the movies. It's really niche stuff, because there's so many Star Wars podcasts out there that just deal with general topics, but this is really niche topics. And I think they found their core audience. They have a very active Facebook group.
That's awesome for only four episodes.
Yes, absolutely. And just so everybody knows, we're going to start transition. Like, this is going to be a moment of transition for everyone. Yeah. Think of this
as our cocoon period, shall you say.
yeah, I think we're gestating, we're growing, we're evolving. This is we're going to start transitioning facebook.com/aggressive negotiations into facebook.com/thenerdparty. We're going to try to merge those pages so you have a one-stop shop, and we already have their stuff hosted on our website. So all you have to do is go to thenerdparty.com, click on shows, and then click on Aggressive Negotiations, and there you can find everything, anything that you need to know. We're only going to get bigger.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. Now, for those who listen to this show, Tristan, are we rebranding all of our old podcasts that have already been released as now The Senate Floor, so that when they go looking for it, they can find it?
Well, I'm thinking what's going to happen is that everyone who's listening to the sound of our voice right now, if you have been subscribed to The Nerd Party, whether it's on iTunes or Spreaker or TuneIn or wherever you're subscribed to The Nerd Party, you will be subscribed to The Senate Floor. So all of the episodes, all of the 41 episodes before, and the emergency sessions and the coup d'etats, those are still branded as The Nerd Party, but we can just consider those legacy episodes.
Okay. So they won't have to go searching for us again.
Right. No, you guys will not have to go searching for old episodes. It'd still be one feed. We're just changing the name of the feed. So you really won't have to do anything on your iPods or online or anything like that. It's just, realize that The Nerd Party is now called The Senate Floor. It's the same kind of branding. In fact, on all three of our shows, look for the Nerd Party stamp, and you'll be able to tell that it's a Nerd Party show.
Yeah, this is exciting stuff. We can't wait to see how it turns out, and we can't wait to, I like to say optimistically, inevitably add more shows.
I think so too, because I think we'll be able to generate more of our own content. And at the same time, we're kind of developing this new network where it's, you know, I don't know how to describe it, where if you have a show and you want to build your listener base, we will invite you into the fold. We'll promote each other's shows. We'll host it on one website, one Facebook page. So we just kind of create one centralized content area for everyone who's interested. And that way, your audience will have a better chance of going towards other shows, and our audience will have a better chance of finding your show. And so, but you still have complete, everybody, like whether it's Senate Floor, or Nerd Nuptial, or Aggressive Negotiations, everyone has complete autonomy on whatever they want to do.
Right. Yeah, we're not here to dictate the content of the show at all.
Absolutely not. Yeah, like John and Matt don't dictate what happens on our show, and you and I don't dictate what happens on their show. When we talk about doing something together, or we talk about new logos or, you know, like new strategies and everything like that, it's all made as a group.
Right. Yeah. Very, very cooperative here at the Nerd Party LLC, or whatever we're going to call ourselves.
Yeah, I think that's a good word. It's like a podcast cooperative. You know, like there's a few networks out there where you have like one person at the head and they trickle down all the decisions to the shows. And I think that works. And I'm a part of a network like that. And I think it's a great model, but we wanted to do something different.
So look for more in the future. Now, Tristan, Matt and John, you and I, and you and your wife, obviously, we all kind of make great couples. Not all of us are romantic, but we all make great coupling. And so...
I think so, too.
Seamlessly segueing into this week's topic, why don't you tell the listeners what we're talking about?
Well, we were going to do this episode for Valentine's Day, but we forgot that Deadpool was released on Valentine's Day. And so you and Lee did an amazing episode about your Deadpool review.
Thank you very much.
And so we pushed this idea to the side, and we thought, hey, you know, even though it's past Valentine's Day, it's still a great topic, and that is our favorite romantic film couples. Now, that's not necessarily a romantic film, but romantic couples in film.
Correct. We wanted to be a little bit more expansive.
Yeah, I have a top five, but I also have some honorable mentions. I could not talk about TV couples, so I'm going to mention those at the end of the show real fast, and... It's because it's so hard for me, because it was so easy for me to make a list of TV couples, but it was kind of difficult for me to make a list of film couples.
Yeah, I think he just wanted to, because I got this text from Tristan last night, behind the scenes listener, saying, can we include TV couples in here? I think he just wanted to show off. So I ended up having to make some TV couple lists of my own.
Oh, you did? That's awesome. You said you were just going to do film. That's cool.
Well, no, I made the more honorable mentions list. Because I didn't know if we usually don't have the show go on for 3 years. And if we did three separate lists, I don't know if that would be possible. But let's start off with the films couples list, Tristan.
Now, do you have a top five?
I do have a top five.
Or do you have more? Or you have less? Okay.
Yeah, I do have a top five, but I came up with a couple of honorable mentions for film as well.
This is in no particular order. Like, I don't have like a one through, like, I don't have like a you know, five down to one. You might, I don't.
I do.
I'm just gonna kind of lay mine out. So like my number five is Jack and Lucy from While You Were Sleeping.
Oh yes, a great little romantic comedy film.
I love that movie. I unabashedly and unashamed, I love that movie. I think it is one of the greatest romantic comedies out there. It's Sandra Bullock at her best. It's Bill Pullman when he was still famous, and It takes place in Chicago, you know, so like as I'm watching the movie, I'm recognizing everything that I'm seeing. And so that kind of helps a little bit. And I just think it's cute. It's romantic. It's adorable. It's not over the top.
It's completely mid-90s.
It is the penultimate 90s romantic comedy. I love and loved 90s romantic comedies. And I just love their interaction. They made the movie. And, you know, she's quirky and funny. He's... You know, like he's strong and oblivious, right. And it just works.
Yeah, I mean I haven't seen that movie in a good long while. It's due for a rewatch, but you know, I like both of those actors. I've always been a fan of Sandra Bullock growing up. Like I'll see pretty much anything with her in it. That is a solid choice.
And you can't have this list without Sandra Bullock being on it at least once.
Surprisingly, I made it through without having Sandra Bullock on mine, which is shameful.
No, Sandy. That is shameful, especially for you.
But you know, I love her, so.
I know you do.
No, that is a great, great choice. I approve.
Yeah, we watch it every single Christmas. Like that, like we have a list of Christmas movies, and that one's always at the top of the list.
Nice. Well, my number five, you're gonna make fun of me for, but it's gonna. I had to get it in there. You can call me biased, but I do have a legit scene specifically that convinced me of how much I really enjoyed, if not romance necessarily, just how much these two characters cared about each other. And here we go. It's Steve Rogers and Peggy Carter from the Captain America movies.
No, I'm not going to make fun of you for that. I mean, I think, no, that's cool. That's cool. I think that, I mean, that's a relationship that's echoed all throughout the cinematic universe.
Right. And that's exactly why I chose it. It is what it is in the first movie, and I like the first movie a lot more than you do, but what really convinced me and what really sold me on how much they actually cared about each other and how much they were affected by each other is, do you remember the scene when he goes to visit her in Winter Soldier and she's, you know, pretty much on her deathbed and she's got dementia and she, you know, in the mid-conversation, she forgets that he was there talking to her. And the way he reacts to that, you know, of her being in tears at the thought of him coming back was just so well done. And it really sold me on how much the two characters were affected by each other. And that was even further affected by Captain America's Scarlet Witch vision in Age of Ultron.
I was hoping you were going to bring that up, yeah.
Where, you know, they're showing every character's deep-rooted problems or fears in those visions. His involves, you know, Peggy Carter and the life he never had. You know, and when she says, you know, the war's over, Steve, we can go home. And mm-hmm. I just love how that scene was played out. And I think it you know, you get through the course of three movies, even though their romance only was the focus of one of them, how much that affected both characters. So and I think it's really beautiful, especially the Winter Soldier and Age of Ultron scenes. So that's why it ended up on number five. It's my favorite MCU coupling. I put it over Tony and Pepper. Even though I like those two, I think that the Steve and Peggy one is a lot more heartfelt.
I'm really glad that you brought up the Age of Ultron scene, because I love that they found a way to sneak her in there. Because that was so gratifying to me to see her in that. And like you said, like even though I didn't really like the first movie, I liked that relationship. And I love that we got to see that continue. Have you seen the TV show at all?
I watched the TV show. I love Peggy Carter. She's my, you know, not only is she my favorite coupling, you know, not counting Black Widow and Scarlet Witch, she's my favorite female lead in the MCU. Gotcha. Like when it comes to like the girlfriends, she's definitely the tops for me.
So for my next one, you're gonna make fun of me. I feel like there's gonna be a lot of that preferencing where it's just like, okay, don't hate me. With this one, the first time I watched it, I did not like this pairing. I didn't. I was like, nope, didn't like the movie, didn't like the pairing.
Okay, so it can't be anything David Fincher, and it can't be anything Christopher Nolan. So because none of those movies you hate on first viewing. So
that's not true, because this movie is now one of my favorite movies of all time. And it's one of my favorite romantic pairings of all time. And it's funny that you mentioned that, because it is a David Fincher film.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo with Elizabeth and Mikael.
Wait a minute. You hated this movie on first viewing?
I didn't hate it. I didn't like it. I didn't hate it. On first viewing, I didn't get it for some reason. Like, it just didn't register with me. I was just like, ah, this is, you know, this is long. You know, like the two leads don't even meet each other until like the 45-minute mark. You know, like it's got a weird, you know, 5-act structure. I don't know. I was just like, it just wasn't clicking with me. And my wife really wanted to see it. And I was like, I don't know if you'll like it. You know, and we watched it together, and her enjoyment of it only elevated my enjoyment. And then I started noticing things I didn't notice before. I think I was in the wrong mood. I don't know what was going on at the time. But now we watch that probably every 3 months. That pairing together, I love Daniel Craig as a romantic lead, and Rooney Mara as Elizabeth has been the best characterization that she's ever made. And them together, even though they're weird and opposites, it just works. And at the end, if you haven't seen it, you should have by now, but at the end, it's clear that they're not together, and it's like a gut punch. And boom, credits. Fincher ends the movie with a gut punch. And I totally respect him for that.
Well, that's Fincher all the time. He, like, can you name any of his movies that ended happily?
Panic Room.
That's a exception. Like, look at all of his other films. Like, someone ends up dead, or it's depressing, or someone ends up totally screwed over. Like, yeah. He's a nihilist, which is why I don't always gravitate towards him.
And I completely understand that and get that. I get it.
But, I that surprises me that you didn't like it on first going, and because I'll just let you in on our friendship here, listeners. This is the movie that Tristan always gets depressed about, that there's no sequel. And I always, whenever he's being, you know, a smartass with me, I'll just remind him about that Dragon Tattoo sequel that's never happening.
Yeah, and it's true. It was that was your way of just stabbing me in the back and twisting the knife. But I've come to accept it. I've come to accept it that it's not happening, and I'm moving on. It's okay.
So he says.
All right, what's your next one?
Okay, my number four is a movie that I don't watch too often, but when I see it, it sticks in my mind, and it's an iconic image and everything. So I think it had to end up on greatest romantic, if not couples, and one of the best romantic scenes of all time. And that's the beach scene between Burt Lancaster and Deborah Karn from Here to Eternity.
Oh, cool. I was wondering if you were going to go classic on a few.
I love my classic Hollywood, and you know I love my black and whites. And, you know, like I said, it's not a movie that I watch often. It takes place on Honolulu before Pearl Harbor. I think Deborah Karn is someone else's wife, and Burt Lancaster is having an affair with her. But anyway, there's the beach scene that's been parodied so many times that, you know, it's kind of become a cliche. Mm-hmm. But there's a reason why that scene is so iconic and so kind of, you know, it is romantic. It, you know, it's become kind of a cliche, but I don't think it's a mistake that, you know, I see the DVD cover for From Here to Eternity, and that's the image that they stick on the front always.
Right.
So I think just from sheer for its sheer iconic status, it ends up at number four on my list.
Nice. Very nice. I think that's a wise choice. I mean, that is permeated the zeitgeist. That is in our minds. Whether you've seen the movie or not, you know exactly the image that Matt's talking about. Yeah, great choice. With my next one, this one's probably nowhere near as well known as yours. And this one is from one of my favorite movies of all time. Like, I always say, like, you know, as film buffs like you and I are, it's so hard to say what our favorite movie is. I always said, like, if somebody put a gun to my head and said, what's your favorite movie? This is the answer I would give. And that's Kingdom of Heaven Director's Cut. And the couple in it is Sybilla and Balian from that movie. I love these two. It's the only Orlando Bloom movie that I've enjoyed Orlando Bloom in besides Pirates of the Caribbean, the first one. And it's, you know, Ava Green, which I know you have a, you know, a checkered past with her, but these two characters together, I mean, like, Sybilla is a queen, and she has a horrible marriage with her king. She actually made him king, but that, we'll go into history about that later. But these are based off of real people. Now, obviously, this relationship is completely fictional, even though the characters are based on real people. Like, Kingdom of Heaven is a very loose interpretation of actual facts. And it's just, they end together walking off and then riding off into the sunset. They are literally riding off into the sunset at the end of the movie. And I love how cliche it is at the end, because the relationship is nothing but you can tell that these people truly love each other, but yet it doesn't drive Balian to do something. Even though he loves Sybilla with all his heart, it doesn't drive him to do evil deeds. And if you've seen the movie, you understand what I'm saying. And so that's why they're on my list.
You know, and my dad need to meet, because he loves that. Not only does he love that movie, it's one of those movies that he owns on DVD, but he'll watch when it comes on HBO.
There's three different versions of the movie. There's three or four different versions of the movie, and I own all of them on Blu-ray.
I just don't understand you two.
Have you seen the director's cut, or have you only seen the theatrical cut?
I've seen bits and pieces of both. I've never seen the full movie. It doesn't necessarily appeal.
You need to see it. For those of you listening to my voice, if you've only seen the theatrical cut, go and do yourself a favor and watch the director's cut, because it is the greatest director's cut ever made by the father of director's cuts, Ridley Scott.
Okay, well, that's a choice certainly my dad would approve of.
Well, what's your next one?
My next one is actually a weird one, because it's a relationship that on concept you think is really silly and shouldn't work. And it should be laughed out of the theaters, because it's the very, very idea of it, a lot of people are not going to get. And it was important that they cast the two roles correctly in order for it to sell. And I think they did, and it's become like a new kind of favorite for me in science fiction. And so I'm talking about Joaquin Phoenix and the voice of Scarlett Johansson in Her.
Wow, weird choice, but like I think that's an interesting choice.
I want it to be a little bit quirky. I want it to be a little bit off the beaten path. And like I said, now knowing what the choice is, Tristan, you would agree that on paper that sounds really silly. A man falls in love with an AI interface that doesn't have any physical form. And so, you know, a lot of people were making fun of the movie before it even came out about how it's, you know, a movie where you fall in love with Siri. But I think that, you know, Joaquin Phoenix is such a chameleon, and in the film he's kind of quirky enough and that you believe that the character would fall in love with a non-physical entity. I know how much you disliked Scarlett Johansson in the past, but I think she was her voice acting in that film I thought was incredible. I thought she did so much without ever physically being in the film that I really was kind of bummed that, because there was some buzz about would she get Best Supporting Actress nomination that year, and she didn't. And I think she should have, because it was a unique enough role, and I think she did a good enough job just with her voice that she conveyed so much without actually being there. And so a romance that shouldn't have worked and was silly on paper, because they casted well, it came out really well, and it's a really, really unique science fiction romance film.
I 100% agree. And yeah, Winter Soldier in this movie made me have a newfound appreciation for Scarlett Johansson, and especially as a voice actress. And I think, I think that's a great choice for all the reasons that you said. Okay, so my next one, this one's a little weird too. And you know, like when I mention this movie, you know, like some people might think, really, like that's the romantic pairing you're choosing to be in your top five? And it's a little different. But one of the main reasons why I watch this movie is for this couple, and that's Adam and Barbara from Beetlejuice.
That's a good one. I like that.
I love those two. I love Gina Davis and Alec Baldwin together. I think they just do such a fantastic job. And they're a couple that's absolutely in love, but not moronically so, you know, like, and not unbelievable. It's not overly dramatic. It's a comedy. But yet they're, you know, they're dead and they're still sticking together because they want to and not just because they have to. And it's their dynamic that sell that movie. Yeah, Michael Keaton is mind-blowing as Beetlejuice, but I really do think that the dynamic between Alec Baldwin and Gina Davis, who really sell that movie and make it great.
I agree. That's a Tim Burton movie I can get behind. That's back when he was still doing okay.
Yeah, that's when he was doing original content. I think Tim needs to go back to original content.
Forget about producing Alice in Wonderland 2, which everybody was asking for.
Oh yeah, everyone was clamoring for that. That's the sequel we need.
I just love how like people are predicting that movie's going to make like a billion because the first one did so well. And I'm like, the first one did well because I think that was the first post-Avatar 3D and we were all still infatuated with it. That's why it did well.
100% the reason. Absolutely. It was a sh** movie. Horrible, horrible movie.
Anyway.
Right, let's move on before I get angry. Yeah.
My number two is a movie series that we've talked about off air for a long time now, Tristan, but I think it's a coupling that not only was iconic for the time, but it's also a coupling that's worked when one of the members has passed away, at least in the movie universe. And I'm talking about Rocky Balboa and Adrian.
If you weren't going to put this on your list, I was going to. I was going to try to sneak in it after the fact. Such a good choice.
Like I said, iconic. Their romance is really central to the first movie, and it has that great ending scene where they embrace at the end and they declare their love for each other just after he's lost but gone the distance. And it's, you know, both actors just sell it so well, Stallone and Talia Shire. I liked her in the other movies, although I will say by like 4 and 5, she was starting to get a little bit shrewish for my taste because she kept insisting that he not fight. And she was just kind of like, when I was a kid and watching these movies, she was always the thing that was standing in the way of seeing the good action, you know, especially 5, where it's just like, oh my God, you really need to give it a rest, lady. But then having rewatched Rocky Balboa, the 6th movie, and now Creed, the 7th movie, where she has passed away from cancer in the interim years, just seeing how that affects the character of Rocky, and especially, I don't want to spoil anything because you still haven't seen Creed yet.
I saw it last night.
Oh, you did? Mm-hmm. Okay, good. I hope you liked it.
I did.
Well, then I'll throw in a spoiler alert for Creed here.
Just fast forward like the next 30 seconds.
In Rocky Balboa, we find out that Adrian passed away from cancer. Mm-hmm. And then in Creed, we find out Rocky Balboa also gets cancer. And so seeing him affected by that, and just when the doctor tells him, you know, there's options and there's chemotherapy, and he's like, yeah, that's what they said about my wife too. And just seeing how that took the character down a really dark path, and I was really, really sad. Like, and that's why those scenes are why I really think Stallone should get the Best Supporting Actor nomination the win this year. Mm-hmm. But just seeing how that character affected Rocky's character, and she's not even in the last two movies, but she's still very much present. That is a sign of a good romance. So that's why it ends up all the way at number two on my list.
I like how you said that, because it's true. She's not in the movie, but she's still present for the last two. Absolutely, and I love how they pulled that off. All right, well, so my last one, not necessarily my top one, but if I had to choose a top one, it would probably be this one. And these people have been with me and lovers of these movies for 20 years, and it's absolutely amazing. They're great movies, great performances, great actors, and that is Jesse and Celine from the Before Sunrise trilogy.
Oh, Tristan, you old softy. Just so you know, that is also my number one choice.
That's awesome. Of course it is. Of course it is.
And I want listeners to know that, yeah, they've been with us for 20 years. I've only seen all three movies just last year.
That's right. I forgot about that.
I had never seen them before the beginning of last year. And so I wanted to check them out. And yeah, this is the absolute best romance for me in any movie series. Because not only does it start off so utterly romantically in Before Sunrise, which I think is like my favorite romantic film of all time. Just because I love that idea of that. That's actually what my idea of a perfect date is. It's not going to the movies. It's not going to dinner necessarily. It's just talking with another person all day. I love that. And both actors, Julie Delpy, Ethan Hawke, I thought sold it. And Ethan Hawke was so damn cute and charming in that film. Sunrise is so utterly unabashedly romantic that even though you enjoy it, you could see that, oh, this could be a little Hollywood. You know, it's you fall in love in a day. But what I liked about the other two is that it showed the progression of a real relationship to the point where in Midnight, when they're married and have children and the honeymoon period's over, they're actually having real problems. It's kind of a sad movie, that movie. But it's realistic, which you don't really see in a lot of Hollywood romance films. And so that's why I really respect it, on top of thinking it's one of the best romantic pairings of all time.
Their chemistry is bar none. I mean, I haven't seen another couple on film that has the same type of chemistry that Ethan Hawke and Julie Delpy do. And they are just as involved with the writing process as Richard Linklater or anybody else. And that really pleases me.
Do you think we'll see a fourth one eventually down the road?
You know, I feel like Linklater would make it happen. I mean, I feel like I kind of want to end on a more positive note, but I feel like Linklater and Hawke and Delpy would be willing to make these for the rest of their lives. I mean, why not? You know, it's only once every 10 years. You know, it doesn't take up that much of their time when they film them, because it doesn't take long to film them.
They've actually said as much. I've watched interviews with them before Midnight was coming out, because people inevitably ask if they're going to make another one. And they said they're not going to force another one. But right. They're all open to another one if the idea just strikes them. Because they, you know, the way these movies are made is they come together, and it just happens to take about 10 years that they all have a new idea that they want to try to get on film for these two. And so they said, yeah, if another idea ever strikes us, we'll make a fourth one.
See, I'd love to see one in 2024 and 2034 and 2044. I'd love to see Jesse and Celine, the grandparents. I really would. I know that sounds corny and stupid, but I really would.
Well, and Before Midnight, for those of you who haven't watched it, they end up having a real fight at the end of the movie. And, you know, you wonder for a moment if they're going to break up. And it looks like at the end of the movie, they might be making up, but it's not. It's kind of left uncertain. So I kind of want to see where it goes in a fourth movie.
If we do have a fourth movie, they better be together and they better have a stronger relationship because of it.
I hope so.
That's all I got to say.
Okay, so honorable mentions. Honorable mentions for film. I didn't mention it because it was kind of like, duh, we both like this. Han and Leia from Star Wars.
Yeah, I didn't put that in there for the same reason.
Carl and Ellie from Up. Who doesn't cry at the beginning of that movie?
Oh. Just you bringing that up makes me emotional.
Me personally, it's not like romantic, but they are a couple and I do enjoy them. Joe Pesci and Marissa Tomei and My Cousin Vinny.
Nice. I only have two. Well, I have three. Like, it was Rocky and Adrian was my top one, and I'm glad that you brought that up. Wesley and Buttercup from The Princess Bride, because yes. How can you not? Tom and Izzy from The Fountain. I know a lot of people haven't seen The Fountain, but if you've listened to the show, you know it's one of my favorites of all time.
Yes, you keep spousing its praises.
And in TV, I'll just bust these out real quick.
Okay.
And these are very obvious. So we got Mulder and Scully from The X-Files.
Of course.
Frank and Claire from House of Cards.
Mm-hmm.
Lorelai and Luke from Gilmore Girls. Eric and Donna from That 70s Show. And Leslie and Ben from Parks and Rec, because Leslie and Ben are pretty much my wife and I in real life.
Okay, so for my honorable mentions from TV, two of them came from the same show, but I love these two couples so much. So Sam Malone and Diane Chambers from Cheers, and then Frasier Crane and Lilith Sternin from Cheers.
Oh, Frasier and Lilith are so weird together, but awesome.
They're great. I mean, they complement each other's quirks nicely. And, you know, Sam and Diane have become a TV cliche. It's the analogy that everybody uses now with a will they, won't they relationship on TV.
Right. And I love that. Just the other day, like, I had somebody call friends of mine Sam and Diane.
See? Exactly. Yeah. I also had Eric and Donna from That 70s Show, because you and I love that show.
Oh, it's a great show.
And my number one, I mean, it's kind of cliche, and it doesn't necessarily date well because that's the time it was in, but, you know, I can't think TV couples without thinking of Lucy Ricardo and Ricky Ricardo from I Love Lucy.
Ah, good, yeah.
Like I said, it's a little bit dated because it has 50 sensibilities, and, you know, he's the man, quote-unquote, in the relationship, so he gets to make all the decisions, but they're iconic for a reason, and I still watch mm-hmm. those episodes today and enjoy them, so that had to go on my TV couples list.
All right, well, that is our film list, our TV list, and our honorable mentions. Thank you so much for listening, and thank you so much for sticking with us during this transition into a network. As we said at the top of the show, the Nerd Party is now a network, and you are listening to the Senate floor. And please make sure to listen to Nerd Nuptial as well as Aggressive Negotiations. Both shows, I think, are going to be fun and different. The internet was clamoring for my wife to have a show. And so we gave it to you guys, like, because we got so much positivity from when my wife guested on the Nerd Party. And I'm just so excited for the future, and I think it's going to be great. And make sure to go to thenerdparty.com for everything that you could possibly need. Also, go to facebook.com/thenerdparty. There you can chat with us, talk with us. Make sure to like us on Facebook. And you can also find me on Twitter at TheInsaneRobin.
And you can find me at MHanson0207. Thank you so much for listening to our special romantic couples episode. And don't forget, we'll always have the Senate floor.
Coming up next week.
This pitch is from the 10th round of the first fight, right? I heard about a third fight between you and Apollo.
Behind closed doors. Is that true?
How do you know all this?
I'm a son.
A great fighter once said, it ain't about how hard you can hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.